So there are a whole set of messaging scenarios, of which some are rather obscure, and I have no experience with some of these. So blocking and non-blocking are very straightforward. Blocking is historically the type of messaging we used to do, and with blocking, messaging comes together with synchronization, because a blocking message, blocking implies that when you call the send or receive, that particular function only returns when the action is complete. Non-blocking means that essentially you post a flag in the operating system saying please do something, and then you return. So non-blocking is in some sense the most natural form of communication in the following way. What's a good example? So when you write a letter to somebody, you're using non-blocking communication. You write your letter, you stick it in the post box, and you do not sit by the post box until the person responds or something. I think using the phone is blocking communication, because you pick up the phone and you have your conversation, and you put the phone down when the conversation is complete. So that says that both forms of communication are useful, and we can use the letter analogy to tell you why non-blocking is useful. So why don't you wait? The reason you don't wait, the difference between the phone example and the letter example is the performance of the network. The phone is a very fast communication network, because you get essentially instantaneous response. The letter would take a few days or more to complete. So it would be rather inefficient to wait for a few days and not do anything. And so you use concurrent processing when you send a letter. You go and do some other computation while your letter is winging its way to the recipient. And so that's what you would do in parallel computing. You might send off some data, and while that data was winging its way off to the destination processor, you would go and do something else that you still wanted to do. So the potential big win in non-blocking send and receive is that you can make the communication overhead go to zero. When I analyze communication overhead for the class example, I was assuming blocking send and receives, because I said communication takes this amount of time, that's inefficiency, which was this magic formula I derived, and that's wasted time. If I could have implemented it with a non-blocking fashion, in principle, I could have done all the computing while the communication was happening. So in the simplest model, in that Laplace example, the way the analysis of the inefficiency for communication says, if I could implement it in a non-blocking fashion, the analysis would say, if the communication, total communication time is less than the total compute time, the effective overhead is zero, because I would do computing while the communication was happening. So, you know, a typical thing you would do, remember in the plot example, we would send and receive messages corresponding to the points on the edge of the domain. So if I wanted to use non-blocking communication, I would post instructions for the operating system to send and receive data for the cells on the edge of the domain, I then go and do the computing for the cells in the middle of the domain, which didn't require any communication. And they could be updated, if you remember. Anything inside the domain, the update only depended on data which was held in that processor. So that was an example where I couldn't actually overlap all communication and computation, but actually in the limit of a large grain size, you could actually overlap most of the computation with the communication. So I would say that this is an example actually why you want to use HPF. For the poor old user, to worry about all those issues is a real pain, because the user has to work out what can be done in what order and what could be overlapped. And so at least when I'm afraid I don't know what happens these days, but back at Caltech, even when we built non-blocking communication, nobody used it, because it was just painful to use, because you had to think this through, and you had to be very careful, because if you did things in the wrong, if you didn't think it through carefully, you might do a computation you weren't allowed to do because the data wasn't there yet. So it would have to be done quite carefully. But at least in principle, with say a good HPF compiler, the compiler can certainly work out what communication could be overlapped with what computing, and so it could do all that for you. So this, I would view this type of blocking versus non-blocking as an example of some of the things that compilers can hide from you, because it's really an efficiency issue. All right. So anyway, that long discussion is about these. Now there are only two types of receive, but there are eight types of send, because there are also four types of send, of which the most interesting are probably standard and buffered. And so buffered is an important concept, because again it's an efficiency or issue. Normally when you send a message, it wings its way over the network and it arrives at the destination processor. And so here the destination processor looks at this message and says, somebody sent me a message, what should I do with it? Now, so this is like your ear receiving some words from me. Now ears don't have buffers, as far as I know. You're not allowed to store up half an hour's worth of data and then play it back. Of course, if you had a cassette recorder, you could. So a cassette recorder is an example of a buffer. So here you are, you'd rather, you wanted to go trick-or-treating tonight, so you'd use a buffer called a tape recorder to record my words, and then you'd replay them at later. So that's buffered output. So I would send it, and you would buffer it, and you would replay it. Now, that's a sort of has some inefficiencies, because there's an inherent copying. If we take the computer example, it's got to go to one area of memory, store there, and then get copied to another area of memory. Whereas, there's a certain, depending on the various costs of things, it can be significantly more efficient to take the data from where it is now and place it directly where it wants to go. So that's unbuffered. It goes from user space to user space. Typically buffers live in system space. That's only possible if you've posted the receive which already exists. It's easily possible with these collected communication where the sends and receives are linked, because then you have automatically they're linked together. So buffering is the most flexible. Buffering gives you total flexibility. Everything goes into the system. You can inquire, you can peruse all the messages, like your email. Email is buffered. And you put it into folders, typically, which are the specific user file. So that's an example of buffered communication. They don't wing their way directly into your folders, which you might keep for particular types of mail. So buffering is very important for asynchronous, unexpected communication. So if you don't know what messages you're receiving, how big they are, what you want to do with them, then the only way to cope with that is to have buffered communication. The messages come, they get stored somewhere, and then you do with them what you want. Now if you think about the Laplace example, that's not what the Laplace example has. Because in the Laplace example, one processor sends data to the other processor. The other processor knows that that data is coming. It knows exactly where it wants to put it. It knows how many data are going to be sent. And so for the classic scientific computing, the so-called loosely synchronous problems, buffering might be necessary as an implementation issue, but it's not necessary because you don't know what's happening. If you analyze it, you will find it's much more efficient if you can avoid buffering, because there's no need to have buffering. All right.